Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today, I have an author interview with Jill Chavez. I discovered Jill last year thanks to Amy, Novel Gossip, and Sarah from Really Into This from the Instagram accounts, and they've been on the show, and they've been talking and raving about Jill. So Jill writes romance and women's fiction so well. I read 5 of her backlist books, and guess what? She has about 100 plus published books, so I have plenty to look back on. In this interview, we chat about her various series, her writing process, and then in-depth conversation about her latest release, The Summer Deal. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Jill. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little about yourself.
Well, let's see. What can I say? I'm a writer of romance and kind of a romance women's fiction mashup. Mm-hmm. And I've been writing since the Ice Age. I have lots of series that go on. And I live in the Sierras currently with way too much family since we're still sort of quarantining up here. And it's been interesting.
I have to tell you, I look at your Instagram post where you live, and it's just so idyllic.
It is.
So even though
I feel very lucky, but we didn't always live here. I grew up in Los Angeles, big city girl, and we moved here, and I knew nothing about the mountains. I had never seen snow. Wolf spiders, bears, porcupines in the yard. Oh my, basically. It's a whole different world up here.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine. So I got a question. Was Wildstone, because Wildstone is a small town, said, was it a source of inspiration where you live? Was that the reason why? Or
I grew up big city, small town was always a fantasy life to me. I always thought it'd be ideal and amazing. And when we moved to a small town, I realized that's true, but also what happens in a small town is very insular. So like you go to the grocery store and you see your gynecologist in aisle 1, you see your dentist in aisle 2, you see your kid's teacher in aisle 3. But in LA, it was all anonymy and no one knew anybody. You go to a place and you never saw anybody you knew. And here, you can't go anywhere without seeing someone you knew. And that just fascinated me, and I just always found the humor in that. So I knew I really wanted to write small towns. So I've always set out to do that. I really love that.
I love that. I love that so much. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I was in journalism and communications in LA at college, and I was writing stories, and I was never getting good grades on them. I was always embellishing them, to be honest, because they were boring and I was bored with myself. And so I would embellish these stories. I would turn them into the teacher. I'd get a bad grade back, and I would say, but that's what I want to do. What is that called? And he said, lying. It's lying. And so I realized from that point on, it was fiction that I was meant to be in, not nonfiction. And once I made that switch in my head, I just started writing stories, and I've never looked back.
I love it. And so you're a prolific author. What was your journey to get that first book published?
Well, when the journalism thing didn't work out, to make my way through college, I was working as a full-time bookkeeper, accounting basically, and doing that. And so it was all numbers, and it wasn't really a dream job, so to speak, but it was paying the bills. And I was writing short stories on the side and not making any money. Then I got laid off, low man on the totem pole, and I was pregnant, so nobody else would hire me. So I just decided, this is the best time. I can't make money anyway. So I started writing a book. And by the time my first baby was born, I was on my third book and my first book sold. So I never looked back.
Wow. That's amazing. I love when it happens when you have no other choice. You might as well just give it a try. And then,
yeah, it was basically right for my sanity.
Yeah.
And it just turned out to be this most amazing career.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating. How many books have you published?
I thought you might ask me that, and I should have counted. I know 2 years ago, it was at 100. And I haven't kept track since. So, you know, somewhere maybe 106, 107. But, you know, keep in mind that some of those were anthologies, so short stories.
Yep.
And some of those were category romance back in the day. That's how I made my bread and butter, was writing the category romance, like for Silhouette and Harlequin, mm-hmm. just the little tiny romances. And they're, I loved writing them, but they were fast and much shorter. So
yeah,
I feel like that number is a little bit deceiving.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So as far as writing, do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
Well, while I'm in a book, the next book is starting to come to me little pieces, and like the characters come and I start to, you know, dream about them. And by the time I finish the book I'm working on, I have to go into plot mode for the next one. And that just takes so much time for me. I used to just write a story, you know, kind of pants it as they call it, by the seat of my pants or jump off the cliff. But I found that it's much more efficient if I take the time to do a full outline first and figure out the characters and their growth, their arc, put a plot in, tie everybody up, you know, in the sense that their conflicts work against each other. And I find if I do that work first, the writing goes faster. Not that it goes easier, but it goes faster. I mean, still, even having a full outline, it's a roadmap, basically. And I, at times, will take the wrong turn. It doesn't matter. As long as I have that roadmap, and even if I totally deviate from the plan, that's totally fine. Sometimes that has to happen. But just the roadmap itself gives me comfort.
I think I can imagine, especially when you're writing multiple books, mm-hmm. you know, or just being contracted to do.
I can't write multiple books. That hurts my brain. But oh, okay. I do write it within a series. So I do have to keep in touch with the other characters in my head, so I'm not messing something up for their story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. So speaking of a series, how do you keep track of all the characters, the events?
I'd like to say that I have this photogenic memory, which I don't. I have a really, really bad memory, in fact. So okay. I keep what's called a series Bible. And as I'm writing and outlining, say I'm starting a new series, I write down everything I know about it, which is usually just the town. So I'll map out the town for myself, and I'll imagine where certain people will live. And then as I write the first book, I keep track of all the characters, their age, what they look like, who they interact with, how they're related, or how they know other characters as that happens. So often I'll have my manuscript up on my laptop, and then right next to the manuscript is the series Bible, so I can add into it so mm-hmm. that when I do book two, I have this helpful little manual that tells me everything I need to know about any of the secondary characters, and then I continue to add to it as the series grows.
I love that. Yeah, I think it's fascinating. As someone who loves reading series, it's fascinating to see like how much work does it take for an author.
It takes so much work. For instance, my Lucky Harbor series, which takes place in a made-up town in the Pacific Northwest on the coast, has 12 books in it. And I wrote that series as a trilogy, and then it became really popular, and so my editor had me do a second trilogy, and then a third, and then we stopped at the fourth trilogy. So that was easier to plot, because I would have been overwhelmed if I had done book one knowing I was writing 12. That would have been totally and completely overwhelming. But by doing it in trilogies, I was able to tell little overarching stories as well. And a Bible was essential. I could never have done that without a Bible.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. I really commend you. As someone who loves series, I commend you for all the work that you do, because it's just amazing.
Thank you. Mistakes still get made. I mean, there's plenty of mistakes in all of this series if you look hard enough.
Yeah.
We're only human, but I try hard, but, you know, there's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, there's a lot. So, do you share your work along the way, or do you wait till it's completed for others to read?
I always make the joke that, or like right now, I'm kind of getting close to the end of a book right now that's due. And I always tell my family, if I die, you must bury this manuscript. Nobody may see it. Because it's too rough. I would just keel over if someone read a first draft. I write very rough and very fast and very dirty. Like, it's just not fit for public consumption. So I never share along the way ever until I'm on draft 3 or 4. And then maybe I'll give you the first chapter. Like, you know, if my editor needs to see it, or if copy it, editor needs to see it or whatever. But it's hard because it's not done until it's done. So I don't know how, I'm amazed by people who can write the first chapter and then send it off and go to chapter two and send it off, because I cannot polish a book until I know the ending.
Yeah, I can imagine. You want to know the arc and the ending. Yes. And the twist. And
exactly. And in some way I'm telling myself the story and I have an idea where it's going to go, but I don't always know. And sometimes that requires going back and changing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I figure it out. I mean, in this book, I got to the 2/3 mark and I thought, oh my God, that's who she is. And I had to go back and sprinkle something in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is why she's this way. I didn't figure that out until the 2/3 mark. I don't recommend that, by the way. That's not a healthy way to write, but it's what happened and it happened. So if I had, you know, given someone the first part of that book, they would have to read it again because it changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I had a question. How do you decide if a series is going to be PG or R-rated when it comes to Steve?
I tend to write R-rated.
Okay.
To be frank, you know, I'm not writing erotica, but I'm writing sexy contemporary romances.
Yep.
And I would say all of my series are R-rated. Mm-hmm. Except for maybe Wildstone, it's toned down slightly sexually but not by much.
Yeah,
I definitely, you know, I tell people all the time, like sometimes I go to a signing and a teenager will come up and want a book signed and said she loves my books and stuff. And I'm always like that. I'm keeping it in the back of my mind, but God, it's R-rated, you know. I hope she knows. I hope her mom knows that.
Yeah, well, we share books, but I have to say, Nobody But You, I read it recently, like I got it in the mail, and I have to tell you, I was so surprised of how R-rated it was. It was fantastic. It was just like when I need it, but it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Don't there.
It's a little steamy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. It was like, you know, when you have books and you're like, you feel like you need something a little more steamy.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect time, like that book was like right at the perfect time. So
I love it when that happens.
Now let's talk about the summer deal. What inspired you to write the story?
For a long time, well, I guess I should say the summer deal is kind of the theme is the family that you make, not necessarily the family that you're blood with.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I've wanted to write a story about two girls who kind of grew up together as frenemies.
Mm-hmm.
And then find out a deep, dark secret that neither of them knew. And so with this, we have their summer camp frenemies, mm-hmm. the two girls. And yet their lives are entwined in ways that they didn't really understand. And I don't really want to give away any secrets here, or spoilers. Mm-hmm. But let's suffice it to say that they go from frenemies to about as close as you can get,
mm-hmm.
family.
Yeah. Yeah, so much of the story was about family, second chances.
Second chances, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And in more than one way, with the love story. There's two love stories in this book, actually, because each woman ends up getting their own love story, and unique love story, very different from each other, when they each thought that would never happen.
Yeah, it was just like, I feel like it was just like, there was enough romance there, but it was just like the second chances were demonstrated with it. And there's the unconventional families.
I actually never intended for it to have that secondary love story. I didn't think it was going to be happy ever after. And that's one of those things that I outlined that way. And they were going to go their separate ways.
Really?
And I got there and I couldn't do it. Like, they belong together. And another weird thing that happened in the writing of this book was supposed to be a secondary story to the main story. But the two women became so strong in my head that each were equal in this book, which I've never done before. So there's actually two heroines. It's not like one heroine with the sister or the friend who's a sidekick. These two are equal in the story. They each got 50% of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I felt like it was just parallel stories that were intertwined, they connected, and they kind of like just, it was like a rubber band. They just came together and they just fell apart, come together, fall apart. There was enough tension, and they explained like your stories were their reasons why. I love that. I love the fact that we got to see two parallels happening.
Yeah, and that, again, that was a first for me, making them equal. And I can remember calling my editor and saying, okay, we have a problem. And she said, well, send it to me. And I sent it to her and she goes, we don't have a problem. This is fine. This is perfect the way it is.
That's amazing. I'm glad your editor said that it was fine because I think you just, yeah, you made the book so unique about it. So.
And another thing that was unique to me was, you know, I've had LGBT characters in a lot of my books, but I've never had, in this particular book, one of the women is raised by two moms. And I've never done that where they were like on the page, and I've had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I love the parents were present for both of them. Like, there was actually the family that it wasn't just family, you just make your friends and you're going to be your family. It was like, here's your biological family, and here are the parents present in a romance. You know, it just, it added a new layer of depth about the story and about the journeys, the character's journey for them to go through what they went through.
Yeah. That one took me forever to write. I mean, there were so many ways I could have gone with that one, but hopefully I did the right thing.
Yeah. So Kinsey has a kidney condition. What was the research like to get this part right?
Well, you know, I have people in my life who have had some problems with kidneys before, and I have a lot of friends that are nurses or who work in hospitals. And so I was able to get really, really great information. At the same time, I try to stay away from getting too technical or too medical about it and make it about the journey rather than what's happening to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was a nice balance. Like, it brought depth to the story and explained, you know, why Kinsey was the way she was and what how it affected her relationships and her friendships. And at the same time, it didn't get too bogged down into the medical jargon. It just basically, you know, you got a sense of this is the reason why she's going through and here's, you know, how she spends her days.
I wanted to show a woman going through, you know, she has one kidney and it's failing. So I wanted to show what her life was like. She, you know, she has a job and she like wants to support herself, yet she has to go to dialysis 3 times a week and she has all these parameters around her life. But I really wanted to show it as this is normal for her. This isn't something that she wants to be felt sorry for. And so that's a lot of what I was trying to accomplish with her.
Yeah. So we spent some time in the kindergarten classroom, which I did find it unique. Why was it important to have scenes in the sharing circle? I love those scenes, by the way.
Well, one of the two heroines is a kindergartner teacher.
Yeah.
So I just find that I could have done any age, but I find 5-year-olds the funniest because the things they say are so honest and so genuine and they have no biases and no prejudices. And they're just like these perfect little people who haven't been ruined by the world yet. Mm-hmm. And so I just want, and I've raised 4 girls. So I know that age intimately, and I just loved being able to use that scene or those scenes for humor around the very serious illness that Kinsey's facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely adore it. I adore the 5-year-olds and their issues and how they dealt with it and how the heroines were
present. Another thing, the reason I used that particular scene was because the two heroines were furious with each other.
Yeah.
And so the kids, when they're mad, they're not allowed to fight. They have to use this talking stick and they have to say their feelings, and then you can't speak until you pass the talking stick. So I just thought, how funny would it be to get these two women who are worse than kindergartners dealing with each other, sitting in a circle with kindergartners with the talk and have to deal with the parameters of the talking stick. That to me was just so much fun.
Are we going to get any more Wallstone books in the future?
Yes. The next one is called The Forever Girl, and it comes out in January.
Awesome. Yay.
And I don't know what the one entitled after that is, but there's, you know, there's the 4 or 5 books before The Summer Sister, The Summer Deal. There's The Lemon Sisters, Rainy Day Friends, Lost and Found Sisters, and Almost Just Friends. And those are all set in Wildstone, but they can all be read in any order that you want because the characters are not connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love about the Wildstone series. It's like they're standalones. They're set in the same town, but they're not connected. So you can actually start. I started with the Lemon Sisters, and I went back, and then I just went forward. So it didn't feel like I lost anything.
Yeah, I mean, that was really important to me because you don't want a reader to pick up and see that it's book 8 and not want to read it because she hasn't read the first 7.
Yeah.
I want you to be able to stop, drop in wherever you want.
Yep. So I love it. So the following question is from Bree Hill, Falling for Romance. She's my friend. She's a blogger and a bookstagrammer. But we've been talking about your books because she's been reading your Heartbreaker series, and I've been reading it with her too. So she has a question for you.
Sure.
She says that you know balance in romance, comedy, and suspense in Molly and Lucas romance. We're always chatting as readers and how it's hard to find stories that balance suspense with the romance. And I feel like on top of Jill Chavez has managed to balance the comedic aspect of the story. As a writer, when trying to incorporate different elements that make up the story, how do you manage these elements and keep the romance at the center?
You know, with the Heartbreaker Bay series, I love that series. First of all, it's set in San Francisco, to give you some background on it. And San Francisco is one of my favorite cities in the world. A couple of my kids live there. And so I'm there a lot. We love that city. The interesting thing, though, that for a huge, big city, mm-hmm. you can get a very small town feel if you know the right place. And the right mm-hmm. place for me was set in the Cow Hollow District, which is right near the marina. Mm-hmm. And I made up a fictitious building, and mm-hmm. I put the building around a fountain. So there's a courtyard inside the building with a fountain. And a long time ago, 150 years ago, Cow Hollow, which is now just a completely built up city, part of San Francisco, used to be cow country. And it, once upon a time, it was like cow ranches. And so I had this building here was built way, 100 years ago, right after they pushed away the farms. And this fountain has a legend that if you wish for true love with a true heart, it will come true. So I made a point for each book to make something like that happen with this fountain. And what happened with the building is it became a small town community because the bottom layer is retail. And then after that, it's apartments. And then there's a penthouse. And so there's a bar, there's a restaurant, there's a coffee shop, there's little shops. And so it's really within itself, a small town within the city of San Francisco. And so that's how I was able to give that the Heartbreaker Bay series a small town feel, even mm-hmm. though it's set in a big city.
I love it. Yeah.
As for the suspense, I mean, I love a good mystery. I love a good thriller, but I write romance. So I made a point of that series. Let's see, which ones was it? Hot Winter Nights, About That Kiss, and Wrapped Up in You all have mini mysteries inside of this romance. It was just fun to do. It was just fun for me.
Yeah, I really love it. I love it. It was just like, it brought a new element, but it's just a new layer of the book that just makes it more fun and exciting. So I love it.
Oh, I'm so glad it worked for you.
Yeah. Do you have a Christmas book coming out? Is that correct?
It's an audio novella. Ooh. And it's called Mistletoe in Paradise. And I believe that hits like November 3rd or whatever. And then a month later, it'll come out in digital. So like December 1st or 2nd or somewhere in there. So it's audio first. And that's a first for me. I've never done that. My publisher asked me to, and I love to write Christmas stories. I love to write novellas. So it was a natural fit for me.
So how is it different to write audio novella? No, how to write a book that's going to be audio format first? Is it different than just writing a regular book? Or
I didn't do anything different, actually. It's still like a romance, and it's still sexy but funny and warm, and it does have a slightly bigger element like some of the Wildstone series books mm-hmm. do. So I mean, I hope people love it. We shall see.
Awesome. Well, tell us where you can find you online.
You can find it everywhere online. If you all of my books are at jillchavez.com. There's a printable book list. Each book has its own page, so if you click on the title, it'll bring you to all the buy links and all the land. Or you can go to Amazon.com, you can go to barnesandnoble.com, you can go to Target and Walmart. I'm in print and digital and audio. So wherever you buy your books, you can find my books.
I love it. Thank you, Jill, for being on the show.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends, then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.